Today on BeerNet Radio, we have Marshall Thompson, co-founder of CanWorks, which is one of the country's leading digital can printing facilities. CanWorks opened around 2021, but has quickly amassed legions of customers in the beverage space, from the biggest brewers to beyond beer up-and-comers. And you guys now churn out millions of cans a year and have facilities in Austin, San Diego, and most recently Atlanta. So welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks. Glad to be a part of it. So
yeah,
appreciate y'all having me on and happy to chat beer.
Absolutely. So just kind of take us back a little bit, because it's so hard to believe that it's only been a couple of years and you guys have just exploded. I mean, I'm sure it's not lost on you that some people, you know, make business plans and then most of the time those businesses never survive, right? But
there's a lot of single points of failure, and we certainly had plenty of those as well, and some pretty existential moments, as our crisis or whatever you want to call it, as well. And so, my brother and I launched this business, and neither one of us came from any sort of beverage experience and or printing experience for that matter. So we were completely green. The story is kind of interesting, I guess. We were both basically corporate guys in different industries. Ryan, my brother and co-founder, worked in consulting and more recently in tech. I worked in commercial real estate for 10 years. And so certainly no real segue to this space, but outside of managing businesses and sales and things like that, but no real connection there. But I think both of us were at the point where we talked about it a bunch. Someday we want to start our own business. And we had kicked around some ideas, most of them being pretty bad, quite frankly. And honestly, the idea that I had was no different. It was also bad. But I had an idea for the canned water business. It was around the time, I think, that Liquid Death started kind of blowing up. And it had an environmental angle to it. And it was definitely more of a kind of like a side hustle thing. It was like, oh, that'd be kind of fun and interesting. Knew nothing about the beverage industry. Started trying to get in touch with co-packers and obviously procure cans. This is, if y'all remember, in 2020, like a peak of the can crisis, right?
Yeah.
And so no one could get their hands on cans. So I was like, man, what is wrong with this industry? Like, how do you get cans? And so sure enough, not only could you just not get them, you know, period, but even prior to that, the can crisis, you still had huge minimums from the major manufacturers, right? So you had to go, if you went to Ball or Crown or Ardagh, and rightfully so, they'd have pretty large minimums because they have to create a printing plate and go through that whole process. The only other alternative was a shrink sleeve or the pressure sensitive labels, which are basically the stickers. And so for me, considering my brand had a pretty significant environmental angle to it, shrink sleeves, I learned, rendered cans unrecyclable. Obviously, when you're applying a pressure sensitive label, you have tons of backing coming off. And I was like, well, that's not the route that I want to go. So how do you get printed cans? So in a search for printed cans, I came across a brand, very, very like brand new industry, which was digitally printing direct to cans. And it was an article on a company that manufactures a printer that is actually no longer in existence. And I was like, huh, that's actually quite frankly more interesting to me. I'd rather kind of provide the shovel, right? And so that versus, and I'm not like a marketing or branding person anyway, so I think it probably worked out for the best. And so I was like, that's much more interesting to me. And I've always been a craft beer fan, my brother and I, but like we've always exchanged beers, you know, send each other, you know, we live in different states at the time, and we'd always send pictures and like talk about it and always craft beer drinkers. So I was very familiar with shrink sleeves and or stickers on cans in addition to. So I like knew kind of like, okay, it seems like this is the route that most of these brands or these breweries go. So anyways, fast forward a few months and just kind of went down the rabbit hole. And I just did something that I would encourage any entrepreneur to do. Is I said, this is really interesting to me. I realized there's no one else in the U.S. doing this. So I just picked up the phone and cold called like 30 or 50, maybe 50 breweries. Some I knew kind of through friends of friends, but most were just straight up cold calls. Called the taproom manager, can I talk to the owner of the brewery? Most of them in Texas, and just said, like, if I can do this and provide this, digitally print direct on the can, would you be a customer? Most of them I'd like explain what the hell I was talking about. But but I think it was 49 out of 50 were like, yeah, we'd be a customer like day one. So like, all right, well, I think we're on to something.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. And so just to clarify, you guys are the largest such purveyor of what you do in the United States, right? Because I think there's somebody in Canada that you maybe
Correct.
that
Yeah, we're the
does.
largest
Okay.
U.S. Yeah, the ones that, in terms of being headquartered here in the U.S., we are the largest. So we have three locations, like you mentioned. Austin is where we started, and that's where I'm based. San Diego, which is actually where my brother Ryan is now based, and our Atlanta facility just opened. And they're very similar. They're wash, rinse, repeat, same printers, same ink, same technology. But freights, and we can get into that. But freight's a big issue with can. You're shipping empty cans. And so we're just getting closer and closer to each customer.
Right. How many cans a year do you guys ship out or freight? Yeah.
Yeah,
Right.
this year we're, I think this year the minimum that we'd print, which we're perfectly on track for, is about 100 million. And then I think we could potentially cross, depending, slow season is, the fall and getting into the holidays. If that still stays pretty dang busy, we'll do more like 120
Yeah, crazy.
million. Yeah, crazy. It's kind of weird when, I saw that, some of the people ask me that question, and when you type out that many zeros, it's kind of an interesting
Six zeros?
Yeah,
We sure?
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Well, what's interesting, I mean, because I was lucky enough to visit the Austin plant. You were kind of showing me all the different rooms and stuff. Can you walk us through some of the early day MacGyvering and Elon Musking you had to do, right? Like putting this
Yeah.
thing together.
Yeah, it's definitely been a, you mentioned it's been a short period of time. It's really surreal kind of thinking back over that time, because it was very, in the grand scheme of things, recently that, like, when we started, we had a pre-press person, Bill Bennett. Steve Zucchero was our first operator, and then it was Ryan and myself. So it was four of us, Ryan and myself being the founders, one pre-press person and one operator. And we were running the printers ourselves with, like, in this printer, it's not like you plug it in the wall, off you go running cans. It is a very finicky new technology, very large, very complex, and complicated. And there's no real troubleshooting manual. So it's like learning as you go. And what used to take us down for hours, now we can fix in 5 minutes. But early on, it was us running this printer in a 120 degree warehouse in August in Austin. And so it was brutal in a lot of ways. I mean, we did do something that I think was wise, which was we didn't go out and pre-sell a bunch of cans. We were like, we didn't sell a single can until we saw the printer actually put cans. Print cans. Now we had teed some people up, right, to be like, hey, once this is ready to go, we'll contact you. But yeah, I was the sales. So I'd have my computer next to the depalletizer sending sales emails at 4 o'clock in the morning while we were printing cans. And I was running around, putting tear sheets on and fixing lines that are showing up on the cans, and, all while cans are flying around. So Ryan was out there invoicing and booking freight. Our pre-press person, who does all the graphic work for the most part, at this location, was in charge of unloading all the trucks of cans that came in, for instance. So it was like the four of us, and we started hiring pretty quickly thereafter, particularly on the operator side. But for a while, it was just kind of a handful of us doing whatever came up. And if it was like we lost 4 hours in the day during normal business hours to printing, it was Ryan or I out there, running from 8 to midnight. And that it was challenging. We exchanged parts with people on the side of the road. We had people, couriers fly in from Germany, literally hand us the part in the parking lot, send them back to get on a plane to go back to Germany. Gave them a bottle of water and send them back on their way. So it's wild looking back on it.
Jay, I'm sure you have plenty.
Yeah, well, I mean, as we kind of continue on with the evolution of the business, you talked about kind of reaching out to craft brewers in the beginning, and then now, kind of, what does your customer type look like? Is
Yeah,
it
it's
more than
evolved too,
craft?
right? Yeah, if I went back on it, in fact, like most businesses, we went out and that's a whole nother story, but we went out to get, debt and raise money and all that stuff. And you put together 5-year projections, of which nothing ever ends up looking like. And that includes, like, who are all your customers going to be? And I made this long list, and a lot of them are customers. But it was like 90% beer, 95% beer. And that's the, granted, that's the industry we knew, right? Like, I mean, I go to a convenience store, I know that there's other things on the shelf, obviously, but I just didn't know those folks. And so I didn't just really understand it, quite frankly. But we have evolved significantly to where beer is probably 40% of our business these days. Now, other is a pretty wide category. That could be a yerba mate, that could be coffee, tea, Delta 9, Delta 8, hemp derived, all sorts of random stuff. So it's pretty ready to drink cocktails, seltzers, everything and anything under the sun. So beer is probably still like the largest subcategory, but it's it's we serve a lot of different markets now. And beer, I think y'all know this quite frankly probably better than I do, but beer has also slowed down on the packaging side and gone obviously since COVID when no one could literally go into a tap room. And so we kind of feel some of that. Now, I think the beauty of where we are and how we're positioned is we kind of catch, and I don't mean down in a bad way, but we catch breweries with their beers on the way up and on the way down. And that means, obviously, a brand new brew or seasonal, that's probably going to come to us. As that grows, it's still going to stay with us until they can go direct to one of the large manufacturers. Now, on the flip side, some of these cores become less popular over time. And I think we're seeing quite a bit of that. In fact, we've had some beers that I've known way before I got this business come our direction. I'm like, kind of shocked that it's coming our direction. So we kind of catch them when they come back down. And now that may be replaced with something else that's selling more than it. So we kind of catch, like I said, we kind of catch things on the way up, and we also kind of catch them on the way down as well.
Well, you mentioned RTD cocktails. Tell me about standard fills, for wine and spirits and cider. How impactful is that to what you all do, and does it kind of hinder you from going that direction?
It doesn't. I mean, we had to kind of put our, we had to make some pretty major decisions around sizing of can sizes, right? And so we offer 12-ounce standard, 16-ounce standard, 12-ounce sleek, and the 8-ounce sleek cans. The technology that we operate with and just some of the conveyance, like the simple conveyance stuff, it's pretty finicky when you start changing sizes, and it requires some real changeover. And changeover for us is money, and for our customers, it's lead times. And so for us, we've had to push quite a bit of business on sizes that we don't offer and just say we just can't do it. And so that's been kind of hard. It's hard as a new business say like we're not going to take that business, but I think it's been the right move. From two angles. One, it makes us more efficient. These are the four sizes we offer. It's all we offer right now. Probably not changing on that anytime soon. So it's kind of nice to be like, okay, that's done. We're moving on. And I think for our operators out there, like changeovers are a pain in the butt. And so for them, they're, I think they're appreciative of it as well. But I do think it does seem as though the market has really kind of shifted into a handful of sizes, like, or, I don't know this and I don't have the data for it, but it does seem that the market is kind of settling into, mainly these four sizes plus a couple of others. Wine is now in the 355 milliliter 12-ounce standard, so we've gotten more wine business than we, used to. Stuff like that. So I think the world is kind of laxing a little bit and allowing it to go into more, into what I would call, like, I don't mean a standard can, I mean more standard sizes.
What are the four sizes that you offer?
12-ounce standard, 16-ounce standard, so your tall boys, 12-ounce sleek, and then the one that we offer a lot of this is goes to the THC's CBD space is the 8-ounce sleek, which I don't have here with me. Same exact thing as a 12-ounce sleek, just basically cut in half. Looks just same diameter. So we offer those four sizes. We've toyed with 19.2s. They're very tall. They like to fall over. They're a pain in the butt. But we haven't. We kind of went and dipped our toe into that space, and we're just honestly so busy with these four sizes. It would have a negative impact on our current customers if we offered more sizes, because more changeovers, longer lead times, it's a snowball effect.
Those the little tiny 8 ounce cans. You said they were kind of predominantly for the hemp derived type of businesses. Do you see them expanding like anywhere else outside of that?
12-ounce sleeks and 8-ounce sleeks, is where, in terms of sizes.
No, I mean just for businesses outside of hemp
Oh,
derived.
gotcha. We do get some like coffee things, some small, like some RTD stuff that like you can kind of imagine, like I only want so much of that. You know what I mean? Similar. So it's kind of the way like you think about it, right? As because I kind of look at, I look at a lot of this stuff just when it's on the shelf in our office, and it's Yeah, it's things that's like, man, 12 ounces and certainly 16 ounces would be a hell of a lot of that beer. And so it's like nitro coffees, things like that, where people are looking for smaller doses of it. And they're great little, it's a great size, travel well. The hemp derived space is taken off on that size. And we run here in the Austin plant, which is where we print most of our 8 ounce sleek cans. It probably, in fact, I think it does, outpaces our 16 ounce standard tall boy cans.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is what's your second, because you said 40% of your mix overall is beer, right?
Yeah, something like that.
What's the second largest beverage type?
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point, in like the everything else category,
Yeah.
we're actually about to like run the analysis tomorrow, so for the month, so I could give you more updated. But hemp, like the hemp THC CBD category, which is still a kind of a broad spectrum, but I stick them all in a bucket, is second right now.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's changed from probably 0.0% this time last year, or very
Wow.
minimally. Yeah. I mean,
Okay.
it's maybe a handful of smaller brands are testing that. We're testing the waters with it last year, but it's been for us like hockey stick on
Right.
that growth.
Right.
So, and some of that is, we do also a lot of like functional beverages that are more like the nootropics and adaptogens and everything else that don't have any like what I would call like significantly mind altering things.
Right. Yep.
And so that's another big category, what I call like functional and energy drinks as well. So again, I don't have like the most updated numbers, but what I'm seeing outside of beer, is energy drinks. And I was going to touch on this, but like the world is drinking a lot of caffeine these days. These are not lightly caffeinated beverages. These are like
Right. 300 milligram or yeah. Yeah.
we're drinking a lot of caffeine. You've got energy, functional, what I would call like non-mind altering functional stuff, or lightly mind altering, and then you've got some of the more like the THC type stuff or hemp derived, and that space is growing rapidly. The RTD seltzer world, I don't, it's kind of stayed like probably steady in terms of volume, the physical amount of cans we're shipping out, but as a percentage of our volume, it's coming down pretty considerably. So, and beer is steady Eddie. I mean, we work with, and this may be a question for later, but we can touch on that more. But we work with breweries large and small,
Yeah.
and for the most part, it's been pretty consistent.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and touch on that because, we've been covering the last few years, the craft slowdown, that sort of thing. And you guys are a good leading indicator, right? Because people are ordering before it hits the market and, then the pull through and stuff. But what are you seeing for craft?
Yeah, we certainly unfortunately have had some customers, go out of business. That's been real. It hasn't been a huge volume of them. And we do work with customers large and small. I mean, we've never been shy about who our customers are. It's on Instagram and stuff like that. So we work with, we ship cans to Sierra Nevada and we ship cans to all the local breweries here in Austin and San Diego, and now starting to move more in Atlanta and that area. And it's kind of hard from our angle because, like I said, we kind of catch people on the way up and we kind of catch them on the way down too. And so for us, it's a little bit hard to understand where they're going. But I will say that it's definitely a struggle. And I think that, our costs have actually kind of, quite frankly, come down. But the industry, to like as a whole, was pretty crowded, I think. I think COVID threw everyone for a major loop because everyone jumped into packaging. Now they're winding that back a bit and trying to figure out, okay, which, what's the next flavor of the month or year, whatever you want to call it. And so I think there was a bit of like a what I call like a whiplash effect, right? Everyone went to packaging because they had to, and then now everyone went running back to the tap room, and everyone's maybe things are kind of settling in a little bit. Now that doesn't mean everyone's flush with cash and it's a great position to be in, but I think things seem to be kind of calming down a little bit, and everyone's getting a better understanding of what their identity is.
Kind of normalizing a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely the one thing which is not shocking, I don't think, to anyone, particularly on this call or listening, is, and we benefit from this, is whether that's beer or non-beer, is it's still the what do you have for me lately type thing, and I equate it to like you pull up the bar stool at the brewery or the bar and you're like, what's new? And I think that's very much the consumer these days. And so the challenge is, you've got to roll out all these new brews or flavors or whatever you're doing each, a lot of times each month or multiple in each month. And that's new packaging, that's new artwork, that's a graphic designer that's charging you for that, that's smaller runs, higher price, that's different ingredients, you know? And so it's like that adds up versus that you're just cranking through a ton of pale ale every month. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally, totally. I'm curious too, you know, where you said you get consumers on the way up and on the way down. Are a lot of the way down consumers like the big brewers who it's some of their older innovation that they're maybe that kind of
Yeah,
thing?
some of that. It's also some of like the core SKUs that maybe the brewery is doing just as well, just fine. And they're so it's not that they're overall doing worse or coming down. It's like that, you know, that IP that West Coast IPA is not as popular as the lager, right? And so whereas the hazy 2 years ago was the thing, well, now their hoppy lager's taken off. And so it's like, well, we lost the hoppy lager because they're going direct to the manufacturer for that one. But the hazy has taken a pullback, so they're just going to start ordering that through Canworks. And so that's right. You know, and we also help them kind of bridge gaps when things do go really well. Oh wow, this SKU or this brew really took off. We're going to need multiple truckloads of that from a major, you know, from you know Ball, MCC, Crown, whoever. But we got to get those like now, and so we need to order, you know, multiple truckloads from Canworks to bridge the gap until we get those. And so it's not necessarily that we're catching like a brewery on their way down, like they're going out of business. It's more just the specific brews that, you know, and so I think this gives them that flexibility, right? It's like, cool, we can still keep it on the shelf, but we don't, it's not one of our four main cores anymore. It's now a seasonal or a rotational.
And then what about, I mean, do you guys do this? Maybe a stupid question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Do you do any like work for domestics, like some of the biggest brewers, some of their core brands? You guys do that too.
Not any like the cores that like, I mean, like we do, yes, they're new, whether they bought someone a craft or there's a legacy one that's still out there and they're rebranding it or they've got their wheat beer that's been around forever, but now it's going to be a blueberry wheat beer, right? So we catch some of that stuff.
Got it.
Not a ton of it. I mean, it's not our bread and butter, but it does trickle in.
Yeah, I wonder if you guys got any one-offs from the Fort Worth brewery strike.
Yeah,
I'm sure not, but maybe who knows.
we've gotten some handful of just kind of random things that have popped up. It's like, whoa, I don't necessarily want to get in the middle of that, but print some cans, right?
Exactly. Well, I have just a couple more, but Jay, I've been bogarting, so I'll let you go.
I don't want to intend this to come off in a bad way, but you know, you talked about starting this company because it was tough to find. The big manufacturers had minimums. Do you think you've grown to a point where you have minimums? Like, do you think,
We do and we don't. We definitely do, I should say that. Like the printer that so you know we're digitally printing directly onto a can, right? This is a Pinehouse can, for
Pine
instance.
House, yeah, nice.
It's the way that these printers work, it's like a glorified office printer, meaning it's an inkjet printer, it's spraying ink directly onto the can itself, it's a drag and drop of a file. However, as Jen has seen before, it's a large industrial process to an extent, right? There's still conveyance, there's still all sorts of things going on to where we can print 2, 4, 6 cans at a time for sample purposes. But from a production standpoint, it makes no sense. The way that these printers work, you really need to be operating them consistently 24 hours a day, which we do. We run 24 hours a day, mostly 7 days a week. So with that being said, we do have to have some minimums. And another thing to think about is freight too. Like shipping a box of cans, you can't do; they'll just get destroyed. And even ship what I always say is shipping a pallet of cans less than I'm 5'9". You know, shipping a pallet of cans shorter than 5'9" mean you know the likelihood of the freight company like putting a lawnmower on top of it or something and destroying it is pretty high. We're running forth through it, so there are some minimums in place for a couple reasons. One to protect the cans, like you need to have enough to ship properly on a pallet. Two is for our efficiency and lead times to where we're running relatively efficient, so our customers aren't impacted. And then lastly, just to make sure it's kind of worth everyone's time. That's kind of vague and doesn't like, and I'm not trying to be rude about it, but there's times and places where it's like this, maybe you just want to go with a pressure sensitive label here. So our minimums are small. I mean, they're, 5 to 7,000 cans depending upon the size. So usually we can work with most breweries outside of some smaller tap room stuff. And even then we've been known to bend the rules every now and then.
That's what I was wondering is, do you have partners that are maybe, asking for cans that may never make it to distribution? They just want to sell them out of it.
Yeah, tons of that stuff. So Pinehouse is a great example. Pinehouse, awesome beer works here. Carl Strauss out there in California. So we work with a lot of groups that kind of helped us get started, right? And that helped us off the ground by providing us with business. I like to think that we helped them too get through some pretty tough times with cans, because when we launched, everyone was struggling still for cans. And so, but it's very much a two-way street, and we understand that. So for some of our legacy customers, we certainly been. Someone had a wedding recently at one of the breweries, and we like, yeah, sure, we'll put some cans for that.
Oh,
So
cool.
we'll do some stuff every now and then. Sometimes it's not even, worth charging, but it's but we obviously have friends in the industry, like I said, who helped us get started early, who bought into this technology when others are like, wait a minute, we want to see that technology maybe get better, or we'll just keep using sleeves until we see, kind of the sheep mentality. More people move into this. Whereas others were like, no, we're customers day one. And so, it's kind of the way business works. You kind of reward those people. You become closer to them, and you scratch each other's back, and you help when someone needs it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But yeah, most, I mean, a lot of orders, if you walked in the warehouse right now, a lot of those aren't, they may be going to distribution, but very small distribution, like craft, bottle shops. But a lot of it's just taproom stuff.
What do you guys
I mean, I
see?
think, because I think, and I'll be frank, I think last week we, or sorry, last month we, we printed, I've got the report here for, we have probably 600 customers, about 150 ordering each month, plus or minus. And, that's a lot of that is beer, and a lot of that is breweries ordering 5, 6, 7,000 cans a month.
Well, so you guys just opened your Atlanta location like a month or two ago, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we
That's
did.
crazy.
So, yeah, so we, there is, we have a sister, Lauren, who we love dearly, but she's not in this business. And so there is no third brother either. So we opened our first facility without Ryan or myself being there, and our team, got to give them, like, huge props and credit. We hired a plant manager early on, and some operators that did, and some did, some didn't, come from the print industry, not printing on cans, but print industry. And so we had them travel to Austin and Vista for a handful of months just to train, so that we knew once Atlanta got started, we could start printing cans. So I don't know the exact days, but it's like from the day that they started installation to our first production run was like 10 days or something,
Oh,
maybe
wow.
4 weeks long. And so versus a lot of these printers are, they can take months to get going, we hit the ground running. So we are already running 24 hours a day in Atlanta, and that facility launched last month. So we put the pedal to the metal to see what we could do. And again, that's our third 24-hour a day location in less than 3 years, manufacturing facility essentially. So it's been a ton of work. The team is so committed, and they're amazing, and they deserve all the props. I'm just kind of the voice right now, but those are the one those folks put the hard work in. But yeah, Atlanta made a ton of sense for us. And Austin, we're from this area. It's a Texas is a big state.
Central, yeah.
Yeah, centrally located. Austin's right here on I-35. And so it's easy to get to Houston, Austin, Dallas, and even other parts of the country pretty easily. San Diego, Ryan's got some, his wife's from that area, so they wanted to get back there. But it also makes, we're talking beer, talking San Diego, it's pretty
Right.
obvious. That's why
West
that makes
Coast.
sense. Yeah, and also it's then you're in the West Coast, so it just covers that. And then Atlanta, I will say, has got obviously some very well-known great breweries out there, but some that we work with very closely and we love. But it was more of a freight play, I would say. Right? I'm in Texas. It's a big state. You get to the East Coast, things start to shrink a little bit.
But
And so Atlanta just made A, you could, it's a big city, you can hire people, yada yada. But from a freight perspective, you're 3 hours to Charlotte, you're a handful hours to Florida. You can get to Southern Florida, which is impossible to do for most places in U.S. And you can also get to the Northeast and Upper Midwest pretty easily and cost effectively. So for us, it was just kind of a freight play, and also a place that you can fly it. We can fly people in and out of pretty easily. So our tech team and myself and Ryan, and so it made a lot of sense from a bunch of different angles. A little different than Austin and San Diego, though.
Yeah, and the freight thing, how much of that cost do you guys bear, and how does that work really?
Just pass through cost essentially. I mean, we
Okay.
end up, funny because with this conversation this morning, we do end up eating quite a bit of freight cost. Quite frankly, it's something we need to do better with, but we do end up eating a decent amount of the freight cost. But we just really just kind of pass it through essentially with a small admin fee because we do have a freight person in each location, so we need to cover that cost, and then we just pass through the actual cost of the trucks themselves. It just that those numbers can fluctuate, and so we end up eating some of that. So we're, we pride ourselves on being very customer centric. I think that's like what this, you're talking about freight, but it brings into a lot of other categories. And I think the biggest thing we saw lacking in this industry before I jumped into it was like, I can't get a phone call back. I can't get an email back. Like, and so that's been a big thing for Canworks. It's just like, whether it's freight, whether it's, work with people and work quickly and be responsive. And if we have to eat some cost to get it done, we will.
So what's the, not that you haven't done enough, because you guys have done plenty, but
Yeah.
what's the next 2, 5 years? What are you guys looking at in the future?
Yeah, it's a good question. New sizes or containers is an interesting thing to us. I don't know, like, if we'll go jumping into that yet. Maybe new industries. I'm not, I think for us, we still have our doors are getting beaten down, which is a great problem to have, but it's a problem nonetheless. Like, we want our, we want to be able to shorten our lead times. We want to be able to service a customer with any need that they have. But we've got expensive printers that we've got to buy and install, and that requires real estate and people and all, so it's not kind of wash, rinse, repeat, as in you buy a printer, you plug it in the wall and off you go. There's a lot more to it. But I do think growth in terms of just adding more capacity. Does that mean new locations? Does that mean more printers? Who knows? We do have another printer, I should say, going to Atlanta that will be there in 3 months, 4 months. So yeah, more capacity. Generally speaking. And then yeah, we'll explore new sizes or new containers. I think, like the Coors, what do you call it? The Alumitech bottle, like the Coors Light, obviously has utilized the most. But at the same time, we're still just seeing so many big brands, household brands, jump into the traditional size that we print now that I don't know if it's necessary. I mean, y'all, not that we print their cans, they're too big, but Smartwater, for instance, y'all, I don't know if y'all saw it, they're going to 12-ounce sleeks. From, which is from a very large bottle to a 12-ounce sleek. And it's like, well, if they're making that move, they're a leader in that space. We
From a
had an actual,
plastic bottle, right?
yeah, they go from the tall skinny plastic bottle to 12-ounce sleeks now. And I can't throw the names out on this call, but there's we get we had another one this morning. Very, very well-known brands, beer and non-beer, coming to us, changing container type and or strategies that involve cans. So I think the future is just keep building capacity, keep building our team.
Well, I have one, but I don't know if you have another one, Jay, but I have more of a fun one. So if you got something serious, out with
I
it.
mean, it's kind of fun, but you talked about, making 40, 50 cold calls when you first started. When's the last time you've had to like pick up the phone and call somebody for a
Oh, I
container?
scheduled a call this morning. So I
Okay,
still,
good.
yeah, I'm my first job out of college was making 60 cold calls a day. I couldn't leave. I wasn't allowed to leave the office till I made 60 phone calls, which was a lot. But it's a good way to learn how to do something. And so I think it's given me the comp like it's a double-edged sword. I'm very comfortable doing it. It's now we have a sales team of 9, between sales reps and account managers. And as well as a national sales manager, but it's really hard for me to like see an interesting customer come across the board and not want to connect with them, right? That's just in my blood. It's what I do. And so I'm on the phone with customers all the time, as is my brother Ryan. And so we're very customer centric. Like I said, we've built a sales team of 10 now that are scattered, throughout the country. Our account managers are in office, our sales reps are out in the field. But I've got a bunch of legacy customers that I love, and still, chop it up with them sometimes. But we also have new big customers come in with some very unique large needs, and that's definitely more nuanced and where I, myself or Ryan, need to step in a little bit to understand kind of what the need is and whether or not we can properly serve them, right? And another thing is, like, we don't want to give, I don't think this is a secret, but like, you don't want to be over concentrated, right? So if someone comes in and needs a bunch of capacity, the last thing I want to do personally is boot a bunch of breweries that we've worked with forever. But also, it's just a bad business decision. If they pull up and go elsewhere, then you're left with nothing. So I am still very, very involved in the sales world of Canworks, just because I don't know if I can let it go.
Yeah, that's good. Play to your strengths.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I want to know what that worst business not decision, that worst business model that you guys were mulling back in the day before you settled on this one. I want to hear the bloopers,
Yeah. Oh
the
man, we had a lot
stinkers.
of yeah. So Ryan was not sold. So I'll give him that. It was just me. I had an idea for like a canned water business, which now look at Liquid Death. Maybe it wasn't the worst idea. And it was much more of like a my really the idea was kind of like, okay, I used to I lived down in Houston, so we fish a lot. And every time you go fishing, you grab like a full case of water. I just like noticed every time I was out there, like there's just plastic, as everyone knows, and water bottles everywhere, like on the beach, in the waterways. And I was like, man, this is so annoying. And I, of course, everyone brings their Yeti, or because brings their
Yeah,
Yeti
yeah.
along. But if you need like a cooler full of water, you need containers, like self, single serve containers. And I was like, I've always enjoyed cans more. So I it was kind of like an outdoorsy, environmentally friendly mark, like just canned water, but angled at that group. And so that was the idea. And in hindsight, Liquid Death pulled it off. I'll give them props for that. But you're going up against, like, A, your margins are razor thin, and it's a volume thing, and you're going up the smart waters. Oh my God.
Totally. Ex
So
yeah. And
it's
they
like
don't have a
anything.
big moat around them. Yeah. Like,
Exactly.
they're.
I mean, Waterloo did it here on the sparkling side, so it
Yeah.
can be done, but it's done by professionals, not Marshall Thompson.
That's funny.
It's kind of funny. We actually tested a bunch of did a test on a bunch of cans a while back, and that's actually what I'm drinking here in sparkling water. We sent it up to Indianapolis to a co-packer there, so we have 7,000 cans of our own sparkling water that we drink in.
Nice. There you go. That's
It kind of
cool.
got my canned water. It's just not for sale.
It's just for you. What's it called? Let's see that again.
It's we took some customers' artwork and just slapped Canworks on it.
That's awesome.
Not for resale, but
Yeah.
we were running some tests, but we're like, well, I mean, there's no reason to waste 7,000 perfectly good cans of water. So we've got a lot of water to drink here.
Hey, that could come in handy, man. You never know. It's
yeah.
going to
But
be a.
yeah, we've had some bloopers at Canworks, plenty of those. I mean, we've made some. Any advice I'd give to someone is move and move fast and pull the plug fast if you think something's going, it's not going to work. It's kind of the truth. Everyone's got the same story, but like we went out, these printers are expensive, very million. They're, each one of them is millions and millions of dollars. And we have five of them with a sixth coming. And so we had to obviously get some debt. And, like you've heard startup stories a million times, we went out to 15 to 20 banks, and they were, every single one of them was like, what are you talking about? And
We
they're
have
like,
no idea what this is.
printing
Yeah.
on cans, you're not an oil and gas company or a real estate company, we're not interested. And then we got to the altar with one, and we're going to close the deal, and it just bumped up against something, and they had a bad experience at the brewery. And so at the last minute they pulled the financing on us, and it was
Oh,
like, well,
man.
Canworks is not going to happen. They did us a bit of a solid and got the got us to the right bank, who ended up is now our lender and has been amazing. But every certainly early on, there's just a million, not a million, but there's a lot of single points of failures
Yeah.
that can crush a business. And that's my, my words are move really fast, work really hard, and if you feel like something's not working, like pivot in a hurry.
Yeah. And if something doesn't work, you have all this beer around you to drink, but I guess not,
Exactly,
right? They're
exactly.
empty cans, right?
Exactly. Well, we have some close friends that we at one point we were
Right.
like seven. overfills and underfills. We were getting 700 a month, and I was like, I can't drink anymore. I'm not going to say what brewery is because they're my closest friends and I love their beer, but I was like, I can never have one of these again.
You know what's funny is like, so we get a lot of beer shipped to us. I mean, it is lovely. It's a blessing. But at some point, yeah, it's like, what do I do with this? And I asked my husband, like, do you think I could just put it out on the street? And he's like, no, you definitely can't do that because kids are going to pick it up. Oh, yeah. Exactly. What do I do? Where do I put this
I feel
beer?
Bad pouring it out, but it was we're just getting too much of it at one point.
Right. Well, I mean, that's all I had. So that was a great conversation, and I appreciate you, sharing all that with us and being candid. And we'll look forward to visiting the facility again soon.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, our website is canworksprinting.com. If y'all are open to the plug, and we pride ourselves on customer service, responsiveness, and just treating people as well as we possibly can. We are super busy, and we built the right team, and I think that's something, that's probably the thing we're most proud of, or that makes me, sleep well at night, is our team. It's a new industry. It's hard technology. It's some days are brutal, but at the end of the day, taking care of the customer is like what we pride ourselves on. So anyone's welcome to jump into canworksprinting.com. There's a contact form there. They can let us know what they need, and someone will certainly reach out to them within 24 hours.
Awesome.
But yeah, thank you all for having me on. It's been fun chatting, and love what y'all do is propping up the industry, keeping everyone happy and informed. And so, again, really appreciate this.
Thank you. That was a bunch of fun.
Yeah.